This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Why I'm easy, I'm easy like Sunday morning.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. That's why
I'm easy. All right, Nikki. Nikki, there is so much we could take from this opening song. I just don't understand why this is the song you opened Sunday Funday with. We were just talking before the show started. I was like, let's do this. I'm a little riled up this morning. I've got a 1 o'clock tea time. Weather's going to be nice. I'm going to start off talking golf because unbelievable what Dustin Johnson is doing right now. You're like, let's do it. And you open with I'm easy like Sunday morning.
I was just trying to keep like a calm tone for us.
What?
I don't know.
What? Come on, girl. Come on. Anyway, it's Anita Marks. It is Sunday Fun Day. Nikki is producing the show back in New York City. It's been a hot second. Happy birthday. When is your birthday, girl?
It was August.
Has it passed?
12th. Yeah, it was this past Wednesday.
It passed. Are you? So what does that make you? What sign are you?
I'm a Leo.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Bye. Oh, no. How are we even friends?
Because we understand each other. How are we even friends?
You're a Leo? Oh, God. Ryan, new producer on Sundays, please. No, I'm kidding. I'm a Taurus.
See, we're both hard-headed. That's what it is.
What's really interesting is Tauruses are really compatible with Cancers. And Cancers are like the sign, the zodiac sign right before you. So it's very interesting. It's like really depending on, you know, where an individual was born in the past, like 30 to 42 days, really dictates if I love them or, and I never use the word, well, I rarely use the word hate. I think hate's a really strong word, or make them acquaintances.
Oh my God. So you're like, oh, I'm sorry. You're July 24th.
Yeah, you're
sorry.
Okay.
Nope.
Well, we could be text friends.
We'll be
no,
text
I'm kidding.
Friends.
I'm kidding. Nikki, I'm kidding. I adore you. You know that. And I'm really excited to be working with you this morning. I know it's been a hot second. So really excited for the show today. Obviously, a lot going on. Like I said, I'm going to start talking golf. For a number of reasons. I want to try to help people win some money and also some really, really phenomenal performance. I mean, epic performance, what we're witnessing right now with Dustin Johnson. I'm going to get into that in a second. I'm going to give you my golf picks and my golf plays, because even though Dustin Johnson is just crushing the field right now, I still think there's a lot of value in some great golf plays. And there's probably a number of people that are on their way to a golf course right now. I'm not so jelly today because guess what? I've got my 1 o'clock tea time at Skyway later on this afternoon. So I'm going to be teeing up as well. So there. So I'm going to be giving you my golf picks in just a second. But let's break down the show. NBA action, LeBron James. We just heard the Sports Center update, which by the way, who gives themselves their own nicknames? Like, isn't that, Nikki, isn't that just wrong? King James with 38 points.
You are supposed to be given your nickname.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
If you could pick your own nickname, what would it be?
Well, I have quite a few nicknames for a variety of reasons. Some I can share on air. Some I'd probably be fired tomorrow if I did to explain.
Leave that to the imagination.
to explain the storylines as to why I think, because I've been playing sports my whole life. I think athletes, when you're an athlete and you play organized sports, you know, teammates, coaches, they create nicknames for you. You don't create it for yourself. And I'm sharing this because Nikki and I were listening to the Sports Center coming in, and the commentator, King James with 38 points. Anyway, Lakers do win. They beat Portland. Damian Lillard, again, not playing 100% because he injured his finger the last game out, but still 116 to 108. It was competitive down the stretch. LeBron did show up in the moments that he needed to. Doesn't always happen. 38 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, just 2 assists away from a triple-double. Okay, I'm really big on the Heat. If you've been listening to my shows, I filled in a lot this past month for Chris Carlin and the fellas in the late morning. And if you listen to those shows, you knew that coming in, I was really high on the Heat. I felt they were going to do really well in the first series against the Pacers. Sure enough, they're up 3-0 in that series, 124 to 115. They beat the Pacers last night. Later on today, what do we have going on? We've got Boston looking to end the series against the Sixers. Man, trust the system. Trust the system, but dudes get injured. You can trust the system all you want. Man, Ben Simmons going down. It just what a tough few weeks it's been for Philadelphia Sixers fans. So Boston looking to end that series today. They tip off at 1 o'clock. We will be off the air by then. Then you've got the Clippers and the Mavs. Luka, game time decision. If you watched that game the other day, you saw Luka. It was unbelievable. He twists his ankle, and I don't know if anyone, if you were watching the game, then you saw it. He literally, did you see this, Nikki? Did you see him hop up the ramp on one leg?
I did. I mean, weren't you just playing?
I was probably more impressed with that than anything that I've seen so far in this NBA postseason. But nonetheless, Luka is going to be a game time decision against the Clippers. Clippers up on that series 2-1. So that'd be really crucial, not only if Luka plays. Obviously, as we know, the Mavs, not the same team without Luka. He's just unbelievable. And again, the Clippers up 2-1 in that series. That tip-off is at 3:30. Then the Raptors coming your way against the Nets. Yes, they're up 3-0 in the series. So, you know, are you giving the Nets a shot? No, I think it's pretty remarkable considering how depleted they were on their roster, talent-wise, that they even got into the postseason. So, I'd love to hear from Nets fans, 800-919-3776, even if the Nets get swept in this first series against the Raptors, okay? And by the way, Raptors coach just won Coach of the Year yesterday, by the way. So the Raptors, you know, they're not chopped liver, as Mama Mimi likes to say. They're not chopped liver, sweetheart. Okay, what does that mean? What does that mean when someone says, well, you know, it's not chopped liver? I actually actually enjoy chopped liver. But anyway, where did I go with that? But I guess what I want to hear from Nets fans is, you know, even though, let's say, hypothetically speaking, they lose to the Raptors today. Tip off, by the way, is at 6:30 p.m. Are you still feeling good about what you've seen from the Nets in the bubble? As we know, expecting Katie and Kyrie to be, as I like to call it, active and attractive next season. You know, it's kind of like, in a way, I know it's disappointing to see the Raptors get swept in the first round of the series, but yet at the same time, it's kind of like you Nets fans have something to hang their hat on, right? Like, hey, they didn't have their best players on the court, but they still had we still got a taste of like what the makeup of this team is, what the base of this team is prior to watching them play with both KD and Kyrie. I think it's a positive. If I'm a Nets fan, I'm not going to be upset. I'm not going to be disappointed if they get swept later on this evening. I'm not. I'm just not. And I'm going into this postseason feeling really good about my team. Really good about, definitely a lot better than the Knicks. That's for sure. So that tip-off is at 6:30. Raptors up on that series 3-0 against the Nets. And then at 9 o'clock, the Nuggets and the Jazz. Jazz up on that series 2-1. Brian Lewis, who covers the NBA from the Post, is going to be joining us in about 20 minutes at 9:30. We'll break down these games. Who does he like heading into today? Who does he like in this series? Also, we'll touch on the Knicks. We got a ton, Nikki, we got a ton of Knicks calls yesterday in regard to the NBA lottery and what happened. It's just a sad state of affairs when it comes to Knicks and Knicks fans, that's for sure. So we'll talk about the Knicks. We'll talk about that number 8 seed. I just came across an article on CBSSports.com, like literally right before we hit air, and it says why Knicks could still reach, why LaMelo Ball is still within the Knicks' reach despite an unfavorable drawing in the NBA draft lottery. So I haven't read this article yet. Something that housework. I will do this in the break because that that obviously that headline definitely grabbed my attention. Here's another thing for Knicks fans I want to throw out. Like, even if, and I'm going to read this article and in the break, and I will give you the details. I'll give you the deets. But do you even want Ball? As I said yesterday, Ball, that family, they're a ball of drama. So I just, you know, I would steer clear of any Ball. But that's just me. Curious. And again, I will read this article and kind of give you an idea of what this writer, what this NBA analyst is anticipating. And with having the eighth pick, how the Knicks, obviously we're talking about packaging and moving up. Because Ball is expected to go number one or number two overall. 800-919-3776. So we'll have Brian Lewis. We'll talk golf coming up. I'm going to give you my picks. Try to hopefully help you win some money this afternoon. We'll talk NBA with Brian Lewis. Then we're going to switch gears and we're really going to dive into some NFL. Mike Tannenbaum is going to join us at the top of the hour. I have a wager on the table. Full transparency. I have a wager on the table with Mike Tannenbaum right now. If you recall, a month ago, even 2 months ago, the conversation developed when Cam Newton signed with the Patriots. And I said, everybody, oh, the Patriots, got Cam Newton. Yeah, this is going to be great. Patriots are going to, you know, they're back. I said, and yes, there are men who talk like that. So I do believe so. Once you say, Nikki, that there are, I'm imitating some dudes out there, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Thank you. So I said, Jared Stidham is going to be the Patriots starting quarterback week one, and you could get that at plus 300, plus 350 in some places. That was an actual wager. There were also wagers out there, and I believe they still are, that Teddy Bridgewater is going to throw for more yards and more touchdowns than Cam Newton. And I want to say that was at like minus 135, minus 136. So I was all over that. And Mike was on the show. Mike was like, you're crazy, Anita. There's no way. Cam Newton's going to be the starting quarterback week one. And again, if you're just listening to my take right now, it's not because I think that Stidham is a better quarterback than Cam. I just think in this pandemic environment, this COVID-19 season we're living in, it's just no preseason games. It's just not enough time for Cam Newton to fully digest the offense and execute the way that I think Josh and Bill would like to see him execute. I'm not saying that at some point in time in the season that Cam starts. Maybe Cam starts week four, week five. But I just don't think he's going to be ready week one. And I'm not saying that Cam is definitely the best quarterback on that roster. I just don't think he's going to be ready. That was my take. Mike said, no way. And I'll bet you a box of Pro Vs. I said, all right, let's do it. So you get a text message. Mike was the first one to text me as soon as the news broke that Stidham was dealing with a hip or a leg. I'm sorry. Nikki, am I wrong here? But that wager should be off the table if we're talking about an injury. The wager was about competition. The wager was about decisions. Now, Stidham is expected to be back at practice today. Got an MRI. The hip and the knee is not supposed to be anything severe. So we'll see what happens. But the dude has not been looking good. He's been throwing interceptions because he's dealing with a hip and leg injury.
No,
Patriots know that. But Nikki, I shouldn't be losing a bet to Tannenbaum because of an injury. That's ridiculous.
No, because it was all about Belichick's decision making and comfortability with the team. It wasn't about if someone were to get sick or injured, and that obviously impacts his decision.
So Tannenbaum is going to join us at the top of the hour at 10 o'clock. Jordan Renan is going to join us at 10:30. What I'm hearing and how Joe Judge is handling practices out there in East Rutherford with the Giants is beyond me. Okay. 38 years old, first year head coach. And some of the stuff that's going on out there is surprising to me. And Jordan Renan has been out there, of course, when the media is allowed to see whatever it is they've been able to see. So we're going to have Renan on. We'll talk about the Giants. We'll talk about Joe Judge and his coaching style. Should be interesting. And it's fantasy football season. I'm here for everybody. 800-919-3776. Of course, if you want to win your fantasy football matchups and draft well. We have our fantasy football marathon on ESPN that kicks off tonight at 9:30. It'll go 24 hours into Monday at 9:30. Mike Clay is joining me at the top of the hour at 11 o'clock. We had our fantasy football draft, mock draft, 10 10-team, 10-person, PPR, that airs tomorrow night at 5 o'clock. And Mike Clay, needless to say, stole a number of players from me. And I'm pretty ticked off about it. So I thought it'd be great to have him on. And we can talk about our drafts. And I'll open up the phone lines. We'll take some calls throughout the show. I want to say I have two drafts coming up this week. This year, as you know, I typically play in like 12 leagues. Nikki, how many leagues are you in this year?
Just two.
Just two? Okay. So anyway, so that's the show. So obviously very football heavy. We'll talk some NBA, like I said, with Brian Lewis coming up in about 15 minutes. You've got the Mets and the Yankees series that's postponed because of cautions, being cautious about COVID-19. Apparently news today is that none of the other Mets players that came back on the flight from Miami have tested positive, which is good. They have a coach and a player who apparently is still quarantined in Miami, but no Subway series. Or is anyone riding the Subway anymore? What are we calling the series now, Nikki? I don't even know. I haven't been on the Subway since God knows when. I didn't like the Subway to begin with. Scares me for this Florida gal. Yeah. Let's talk about love. Is it anything in there? Anita Marks with you here on 98.7 ESPN. Without further ado, Brian Lewis joins us. You see his work all over the post. Brian, good morning. How are you?
All right. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Let's dive into, before we start talking local Knicks and Nets, let's look back at yesterday's games. The Lakers, they take care of Portland 116-108. LeBron goes off 38 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 assists shy of a triple-double. But, you know, he's been getting a lot of criticism, especially heading into the postseason. There are a number of analysts that are not picking the Lakers to win the championship. In fact, there are a number of analysts who thought that Portland could pull off the upset. And again, they've won one game. The series is only 2-1. They still can. I know Damian Lillard is dealing with a finger injury. But what is your take on what you've seen from the Lakers so far, Brian?
Well, I mean, I've been on record as saying I thought the Clippers were going to win this whole thing. I haven't seen anything to change my opinion of that. Now, I think LeBron gets, you know, unduly criticized for it. I mean, you know, I don't think the Lakers should be winning this. I really don't. I mean, when you look at the depth on the squad, I think the Clippers have a better team. And I think what LeBron is doing to carry that team is, I mean, it's above and beyond. You know, if somebody wants to look at what, you know, what's going on that team, when I look at, say, JR, I mean, those are the issues. LeBron's not the issue. LeBron's doing everything that could possibly be expected of him.
But here's the thing, Brian. I find this really, like, and I'm, people call me a LeBron hater, and I'm not a hater, right? I'm really not. But when you look at the championships that LeBron has won, right? You look at the assistance that he's gotten, right? Like clutch shots with a few seconds left. I mean, from what I was told, and I'm from Miami, so I know a lot of people down there in Miami. The Spurs, they already had the bubbly open in the locker room, right? Like, you know, Kyrie Irving and what he was able to do. And so a lot of the criticism coming into this series is, you know, is AD that sidekick to LeBron that he needs to win the championship, that, you know, everybody, like Dwayne Wade has stepped up, Kyrie has stepped up, certain players have stepped up. And, you know, granted, every team, there's a reason why there's big threes and now there's, you know, a lot of big twos in the NBA, and you need that supporting cast. I get that. But I just feel like with LeBron, it's so much more emphasized in regard to, we know how good LeBron is, but has he chosen is his Robin now good enough to win the title for him? I feel that's the narrative, especially watching a lot of sports television this week. All the talk was on AD as opposed to, can LeBron pull it through in the clutch? It's all about AD. Does he sizzle or does he flame out in the fourth quarter?
Well, I mean, I agree. That has been the narrative. I mean, yes, I wouldn't disagree at all. And I think that's probably because that's a tantalizing question. We get to find out. We get to see him, meaning AD now, playing these games that matter, these games that, and I, you know what I'm saying. I'm not disrespecting the games that he was playing in the regular season before he got there. But now we get to see him in crunch time, and we get to see him perform under a much brighter spotlight than we've gotten to see him perform before. And I think that's tantalizing to a lot of fans and a lot of analysts. I mean, I'm curious to see it. I'm looking forward to it.
Another series that I was really high on the Heat, and Jimmy Butler, boy, has he been great. Heat up 3-0 in the series against the Pacers. Granted, they had 52 free throws last night. That was pretty interesting. How far do you think this Heat team could go, Brian?
I've changed my opinion. Some much smarter people than me were on the Heat from the very beginning, before we even got through the bubble. People were on the Heat. And I'm a believer. I was always a believer in Butler. I was always a believer in the Heat's front office and their coaching. But I underrated the sum of those parts. Actually, I underrated the whole, what this team could be. That team is dangerous. And then when you look at what they've done to kind of rejigger from where they were not that long ago, where they were mediocre and capped out and had no star players, to where they are now, when you're going to actually be able to create room and then add another player in a year, oh, they're back. That team is good. That team could certainly, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, if I were to take that team versus, say, Milwaukee in seven games, it would not stun me to see them be able to beat a Milwaukee. It really wouldn't. I think they're that good.
In Pat Riley, Miamians trust, that's for sure. Okay, today at 1 o'clock, you've got Boston and the 76ers. What a sad state of affairs for the Sixers, right? Boston up 3-0 in this series. Ben Simmons gets injured. It's just been such a long, long road for Philly fans. Really, really unbelievable. But let's talk about the Clippers. You said you like the Clippers coming in. They tip off at 3:30, and Luka apparently is going to be a game-time decision. I mean, listen, as we know, the Mavs, not the same team without Luka on the court. I do believe he gives it a go. I'm just not sure, you know, how productive he's going to be. Clippers up on this series 2-1 already. How do you see this playing out?
Quickly and briefly at this point. I'm being honest. And that's how important he is for them. Yes, I agree with you. I think he'll attempt to go. I don't know how long he'll be able to go or how well he'll play with his condition. I don't know. But at this point, yes. I don't see them putting up a real challenge now for the rest of this.
The Raptors, as we know, going up against the Nets. Nets 5-3 in the bubble. Looked impressive, but they're about to get swept by the Raptors, who, by the way, their head coach won Coach of the Year yesterday. That was announced. Tip-off is at 6:30. By the way, the Nets getting 13.5. Is there still some fight in this dog, Brian? What do you expect from this Nets-Raptors game later on this evening? Tip-off is at 6:40 p.m., by the way.
I mean, I'm sure there's a little fight in it because you have guys that are fighting for contracts. I mean, this team's going to look very different next year, and the Nets will be a lot deeper, and there will be places at the bottom of that roster that are still undecided. But, I mean, it's really it's a one-sided fight. I mean, this is like a Maltipoo against a Rottweiler. If you're talking about the fight of the dog, this is one-sided at this point. Toronto is so far and away more talented than the Nets team that's actually going to take the court, which is, as you know, is not even close to being a full-strength Net team.
Again, the Nets getting 13.5 later on this evening. And by the way, that Clippers-Mavericks game, Clippers are favored by 8. So, therefore, of course, Dallas is getting 8. Brian Lewis joining us. You can see his work at the Post, so make sure you do that. Before we let you go, let's talk more local. In regard to let's stick with the Knicks for the Nets for a second. In regard to their coach search, you know, there's so many reports out there. You know, are they going to get in meeting with Pop because Pop's relationship in history with Marks, KD wanting Jackson. What's the latest? What are you hearing, and what do you anticipate to develop here?
Well, what I would say is that the players at least the players that are in the bubble, what they're publicly saying does seem to match up with what they'll tell you in private, in that they really have a lot of respect. They really think that Jacques has done a great job. Now, Jacques's been there. This is not like Jacques just got there a minute ago. I mean, he has been there, well, he's there longer than Kenny is now. So I do believe he's going to get a legitimate opportunity, and he's known Sean for 10 years. So I do believe he's going to get a legitimate opportunity. If I had to put money, I would say he and Ty Lue would be your most likely candidates. But, you know, Ty Lue is going to have a lot of options. You know, I have no idea what Philly's going to do after this is over. I don't know. But, I mean, there will be jobs out there, and Ty Lue is going to be at the top of a lot of people's lists. So I don't know whether Ty Lue would prefer this job to some other.
Well, let me ask you this, because we've seen this in the past. You know, the KD and Kyrie's voice in the decision-making process, since obviously they are the faces of the franchise. How much weight does their opinion have in this decision-making process?
Vast, huge, whatever other adjectives you want to use to describe this.
Okay.
And that's why I say, that's why I was very specific to say the players in the bubble. I don't know what KD's opinion on Jacques is. I don't know. And I don't want to imply that he's not enamored with him or that he loves him, because I truly have no idea. Couldn't tell you. We do know that he's developed a good relationship with Kyrie. He was essentially Kyrie's position coach. He was a guy working him out before games, at shoot-arounds, so forth and so on. They have a good relationship. And obviously, we also know Kyrie's relationship with Ty Lue and how long-standing that is and the success that they had. So, yes, to answer your question, yes. Both of them will have a huge hand in who the next coach is. So, yeah, what the players in the bubble are saying is noteworthy, but frankly, it's probably going to pale in comparison to what KD and Kyrie are going to be saying to Sean Marks and to Joe Tsai behind closed doors.
All right, Brian, before we let you go, final thoughts. Let's talk about the Knicks. Unfortunately, they get the 8th pick. Man, I just this team never ceases to amaze me. In the lottery, I read an article today on CBSSports.com talking about how the New York Knicks can still possibly get LaMelo Ball, because all the teams, it just so happens, the other 7 teams that are drafting before them don't need a point guard. And it got into how, you know, this love fest between Ball and New York and the Knicks, and how he's such a great fit. Is that a pipe dream? Like, is that how realistic is that, that at 8, the Knicks could still get Ball?
I mean, I probably would have to defer to my teammate Mark Berman on that one. I don't know how realistic it is. It seems to me, yes, I think they probably internally would love to have him. I think he would probably flourish in this market. How realistic do I think that they could sit where they are and not move up and get him? That probably seems a little bit unlikely to me. Maybe a little far-fetched, but who knows? Crazier things have happened, I guess.
That's for sure. Brian, thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday fun day.
No, thanks for having me.
You got it. Brian Lewis, again, see his work at The Post. Mike Tannenbaum joins us now. Mike, thank you again so much. Sunday morning, I know this is for families. Last minute, I text you today, and I appreciate your time. I won't take that much of it, but thank you so much for spending time with us this Sunday morning. I was just reading one of the top storylines in regard to Cam Newton. The listeners already know what our wager is and why you're joining us on the show, because I don't feel that it's fair if it's not fair, say it's not fair that you win a wager if it's because of injury to Stidham. However, I hear that the MRI came back negative and that he's supposed to be back at practice today. And I know there's been a lot of criticism about, I think he threw like 6 interceptions the other day at practice. But a big reason they're saying is because he's been dealing with a hip and leg injury. So I'm still on Stidham starting. I'm not giving up, Mike. He's going to start week one. I know you're still not believing it, but I'm sticking to my guns.
Well, it's great to be with you. And, you know, I just like to be on with people that are great philanthropists like yourself who'd like to give away golf balls. So, you know, anytime I can serve, you know, the greater good for people like yourself, I'm happy to do so. So it's great to be with you.
So I was just reading, you know, Mike Reese, who does a phenomenal job of covering the Patriots, and he has for so many years. He said Cam Newton took more competitive reps at quarterback on Thursday, which marked the first time things weren't as evenly distributed. But he also said that no QB has decisively separated themselves from the pack at this point. You know, again, here's what my concern is, right? You know that this has to be a crash course. This has to be like a Cliff Notes version. I'm sure there's millennials out there going, Cliff Notes, what's that? I mean, it's what I lived on in high school. You need a Cliff Notes version for Cam Newton to really get ready for the season. But that's not how the Patriots have been handling this. It has been evenly distributed, not just between Cam and Stidham, but also Brian Hoyer, Mike. So here's the thing. If they knew going in from the minute that Cam Newton put his John Hancock on that contract that he's going to be the starting quarterback week one, this to me, and granted, Bill Belichick, some people feel the greatest of all time. Who am I to tell him how to coach? I just don't know if this is the best course of action. If that's who you, if this is the guy that you want to start, boy, you need to get him entrenched from the get-go. And that's not what they've done, Mike.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, and I'm going to somewhat contradict myself by saying this, because I do think continuity is going to rule the day, especially early in the year, especially when we talk about that marquee opening day matchup of Tampa Bay and New Orleans. And I've made this point repeatedly on ESPN, which is, you know, going to that game, Drew Brees has been with Sean Payton for approximately 13,000 snaps, and Tom Brady and Bruce Arians have been together for zero. With that said, though, Anita, what I do think is really consequential here is everything you said makes a ton of sense, but I really look at it from the inverse, which is this. On opening day, they played the Miami Dolphins and that revamped Dolphin defense, which I'm really looking forward to seeing. Mm-hmm. But if you're Brian Flores, the longtime defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots, now the head coach of the Dolphins, you have no idea what to get ready for. And more specifically, Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator of the Patriots, was in Denver. And he had an offense with Tim Tebow, which it may look like. Cam Newton 2 years ago was having an incredible year with North Turner, which had a lot of play action downfield, which is what North Turner is always known for, like a very heavy play action sort of downfield passing game. And then you have the Patriot offense, which has a lot to do with controlling the middle of the field, throwing the ball to backs and tight ends. And I have 20 years of scar tissue trying to defend an incredibly hard offense, playing both with the Jets and the Dolphins. So if I'm Brian Flores, I want as much information as I can about what that new Patriot offense could look like. Now, again, we could disagree about Stidham or Cam Newton all day, but fundamentally, what are the concepts that the Dolphins are getting ready for? And this is, and I'm not trying to overstate it by using this word, but Anita, this is truly historic. There are no preseason games, no joint scrimmages. There's zero information that Miami's going to have. So of all the games on opening day, you know, and look, we all love football. We can't get enough of it. I can't wait to see not only, I believe, Cam Newton to be under center, but more fundamentally, what does that look like? Do they have direct runs for him? Is it RPOs? Is it, like, what does it look like? And I think the Patriots' strengths are clearly, you know, through the running back room, obviously not the receiver room. But I know Josh McDaniels, I was very fortunate to work for Coach Belichick a couple times. Like, he is very resourceful, and he'll use what he has to the best of his ability to be successful.
Here, and Mike Tannenbaum so graciously joining us here on a Sunday morning. But here's another thing, Mike. You know, it's not we're sitting here and you and I are you know debating or discussing, you know, Cam Newton, Jared Stidham. What about everybody else? You know what I mean? Like now you're putting everybody, you know, the offensive line obviously is going to potentially, you know, have different blocking schemes for Cam than they would with Stidham. If, of course, you're assuming that Stidham is going to come in and play the Tom Brady system that he's been studying and learning under Tom for an entire year. Wide receivers, you mentioned the running backs. Running backs are injured right now. You know, Sony Michel's injured with a foot. Lamar Miller is injured as well. Man, I think I drafted Damian Harris in like the 14th round of my fantasy football league because I think Harris is going to come in second year running back. I think people, you know, forget how great he was at Ohio State, but I think he's going to come in and be the lead back at least for the first few weeks. I think changing, I understand what you're saying, and I understand the strategy of it. It makes a lot of sense in a normal non-pandemic environment where you've got a ton of OTAs, you sign Cam early, you're able to implement things, practice normally, scrimmage, preseason games. I agree with you. I think this is going to be fascinating week one, which, by the way, I talked about this on my gambling show on Friday night. Like, I've already got money down on week one and week two lines. Right now, the Patriots are favored at home by 6.5 against the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins getting 6.5, just FYI. I'm looking at games. You mentioned the Saints and the Bucks. Saints at home -4, Mike. And I was just reading an article. I'm going to share it on my show a little bit later in regard to all the safety protocols for teams that are traveling and what they're going to have to go through, the hoops that they're going to have to go through when they're on the road. Right now in wagering, home teams have a 3-point advantage when it comes to handicapping. Dude, that's got to go up to at least 4, 4.5 based on how different travel is going to be this year for these teams. And I'm hearing some teams are going to travel the same day they play so they don't have to stay in hotels and turn around and come home. Mike, how difficult is that going to be?
Yeah, I feel like we're like you and I should like co-host like a show that's like a Republican and Democrat because I see it completely opposite.
I love it. This is good for radio. This is great, Mike. Yeah, continue.
Yeah. Here's why. Because, like, for years, like, I dreaded going to those loud places like the Seattles of the world or Baltimore where, you know, you couldn't hear, like, the guy sitting, you know, next to you, you know, in the box or, you know, certainly down the field, like, with silent cadences. So I agree, like, the travel part's going to be brutal, and like maybe it's same day. And I think certainly in those like northeast clusters, you know, you're going to see a ton of you know, in and out on the same day. I totally agree with that. It's going to be very unusual, but when you get to the game itself, I think it's an unbelievable equalizer because there's no crowd noise. And I was talking to people in and around the NBA recently because I was very curious to hear about what they thought about what was going on with the bubble. And a couple of interesting things. The first couple of games were very unusual, but then you heard things like the players got lost in the competition. And the other interesting thing that they're coming out of Orlando, Anita, is this. The energy is being driven by assistant coaches and the players on the bench. So whereas if you're Tampa Bay, right, and ordinarily, that Superdome would be popping on opening day, making it hard for Tom Brady. That's not going to happen. So I think it's more of an equalizer than anything else.
Here's the thing, though, because I'm talking to a number of folks in around our industry that now oversee like the stadium experience. Teams, even though they're not going to have fans, they're going to be able to pipe in sound. And the sound that they're going to pipe in, Mike, when their teams are on offense and defense, the decibel is going to be very different. And again, listen, I understand what you're saying. There's nothing like live fans, crazy, hectic, going nuts, the 12th man up in Seattle. I get all that. But don't think like teams are already anticipating that's how that home field advantage is going to come into play in regard to the decibel level that these teams are going to be playing piped in sound when their teams are on offense and defense. Mike, before I let you go really quick, I do want to get your thoughts on what's going on with the Jets right now. Their entire wide receiving core is depleted. Realistically, you know, it's not like they went out and I understand they went, they got Becton, they addressed the offensive line, still not what it needs to be. But like, who, like, I'm hearing Jamison Crowder is like, Jamison Crowder and Herndon are going to be like, the two go-to guys for Sam Darnold like they were last year. Realistically, how fair is it in regard to expectation for Sam Darnold? I feel like last year was mono, the year before that. Like, I just feel like there's, and not to say that there's excuses, but I always feel like there is a hurdle for this young man. Like, at what point in time are we as Jets fans going to make, not that I am a Jets fan, but I'm just saying we as media and Jets fans are going to make a true assessment in regard to Sam Darnold? Because I don't even think it's going to be this year, Mike.
So when you just said the Jets, I thought we were going to go 3-for-3 and you were going to say something that you expect Joe Flacco to start and we were going to disagree for the third time here.
No, but you know what I do? Yeah. Don't be surprised if they quarantine Joe Flacco and they keep him away from the team, especially he's dealing with a neck and neck issue right now. Don't be surprised if they keep him away from the team and they quarantine him just in case. Just in case. Everyone else in that quarterback room comes down with COVID-19. They've got Joe Flacco that could start a game. I think that's really, I had a debate with a friend the other day. I think that's really wise. Teams, as soon as the season starts, you take whether it's your second or third string quarterback, you make the decision and you just keep him away from the team the entire season. You quarantine him in a space, you work him out, you prep him differently so that if any of your quarterbacks or let's say all your quarterbacks in that quarterback room come down with COVID-19, you're not reaching for a wide receiver who used to play quarterback in high school. You've got one quarantine ready to rip it, you know, at noon at 1 o'clock on Sunday. So I think that's a brilliant idea. But nonetheless, really quick, your thoughts on Sam Darnold?
Yeah, no, and here's what I would say is, like, to me, greatness, Anita, is always about, like, how can you impact others? And the great quarterbacks, like, every year we would talk about, oh, this is the year New England's going to take a step back because they lost player X or Y. And to me, I think your point is fair. Like, when you look at their weapons, maybe they're not as good as others, but I'm very bullish on Chris Herndon. I think their receivers are young but developing. But at some point, hey, Sam, if you're going to be great, make others around you better. That's part of your job description.
It will be interesting. I like the young man. I think he's really, you know, he's the kind of player you want to root for, Mike. He's the kind of player you want to see him do well. I hope he does have success this season. Mike, always a pleasure having you on the show. I so appreciate your time. Please know that, especially on a Sunday morning. I know Sunday is the day for family. So thank you so much, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Anita. Really enjoy it. Thank you.
You got it. Mike Tannenbaum. One of the positives about hosting Sports Talk Radio at home is you get to have breakfast. I get to have breakfast with you guys at 10:30 in the morning. Without further ado, Jordan Renan joining us. Jordan, good morning.
Good morning, Anita. What's going on today?
I just made a phenomenal English muffin with melted cheddar cheese on top in one of my four air fryers. Do you have an air fryer?
I don't. I really do want to get one, though. I hear good things about them.
This is fascinating to me. There are more people who do not have air fryers than do. It's one of the greatest inventions ever in the history of the world. And so many people are without. I don't understand. You're like, man, get on it.
The times. I mean, it intrigues me. I don't know, like, what would I be using it for on a regular basis?
Everything. No. Steak, chicken, salmon, broccoli, asparagus, baked potatoes, twice baked potato, like French fries.
Would I really want to use that over the barbecue for some of those things?
Yeah, if you don't want to go out and, you know, and start the barbecue up and, you know, smell like a barbecuer after.
I don't know. You gotta have to do more to pitch me on it.
And I live in an apartment. I don't have the luxury. Sorry, Jordan. I don't have a house in the burbs with a pool and a white picket fence and, you know, two kids and a dog.
I do have a white picket fence. I do not have a pool, Anita. No pool.
Well, that's a shame. Jordan Renan joining us now, 98.7 ESPN. He covers the Giants. All right, let's get right to it.
Okay.
What the heck? Please paint the picture for me and Giants fans out there in regard to what it's like to watch Joe Judge coach.
It's like if you take the clock and turn it back like 20, 30 years, and then you just put like a little modern twist on it. That's really what it's, I mean, like the yelling and cursing you hear from Giants coaches is at a level that I have not seen in quite a while. I mean,
Tony Dungy would be mortified is what you're telling us.
Tony Dungy could not come watch the Giants practice and feel comfortable. He really can't. I mean, Joe, I curse a lot. You know, I mean, my expletives per sentence ratio is pretty high in general. Joe Judge puts me to shame. I mean, I think I heard him with a sentence with about 7 or 8 F-bombs in the same sentence the other day. And he's not the only one. I mean, this is their approach, right? They're going to coach these players hard. I mean, he warned everyone. This is what he was going to do. He said he was going to come in. He was going to bring I believe I'm quoting this exactly, old school physical mentality, right? And that's really what you've seen at these practices, an old school physical mentality. They're coaching them up like an old school coach would, like a Bill Parcells-esque type coach would coach players up. And they're running a way more physical practice than we've seen in quite a while with the Giants. I'll say this, Anita. You were around for a lot of this time. I came in 2013. I had never seen a tackle to the ground at a Giants practice until this year, until Joe Judge came in. That's what the NFL has kind of evolved into. The last time I saw a full tackle to the ground, and that includes the end of the Tom Coughlin era. They weren't tackling to the ground.
Nope.
At least
they were playing in bubble. They're playing in bubble wrap. They're practicing in bubble wrap.
Last time I saw it was Andy Reid with the Eagles when I was covering them, I don't know, over a decade ago probably. That was the last time I had seen a tackle to the ground.
I don't know if I ever shared this story with you. So prior to me coming to New York, I was in Baltimore and I covered the Ravens. In the last 2 years I was there, it was in Harbs. Harbaugh took over. And Scott.
Harbaugh came in on fire, right?
Oh, man. So Willis McGahee was a running back. Bart Scott played special teams. Bart Scott wasn't even a starting linebacker at the time. And he was in. He was filling. I think he was in for Ray Lewis. And it was, again, it was a practice, a live practice. Willis McGahee hit a hole. Bart Scott came in, you know, because Bart's trying to, you know, get a starting, you know, get more playing time, get the starting linebacker job. Boom! I mean, like Bart just like decapitated him. All of a sudden, I look down. One of Willis McGahee's teeth, one of his teeth, are on my shoe, and with blood. And I walked over to Chad Steele, who's their PR guy, and I lifted my foot up and I said, "Chad, you might want to give this back to Willis." And literally, Willis was maybe 15 yards from me, in his tooth landed on my shoe. No, you're absolutely right, Jordan. We have not seen that in years. We have not seen that in years.
Think about this for a second. Think about this. John Harbaugh, the coach that you're talking about. He's a disciple of Andy Reid, who I still believe is one of the few coaches that does have some live tackling in training camp up until this year, at least. Right? He's a disciple. Some of these other guys that run full tackle practices, Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, I believe, in Chicago does. These are all Andy Reid disciples. Well, it's the same concept here with Joe Judge, because another guy who does it is Bill Belichick. He's obviously the Bill Belichick disciple, right? Everything Joe Judge learned, not everything, but we know a lot of what he's learned, it was under Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. So a lot of things he's going to do and he's going to bring with him are going to be very Belichick and Saban-like. The key for him is going to be walking that fine line of being able to pull it back and rein players in and keep them happy, because we've seen in the past with Matt Patricia, with all these Belichick guys, that if you don't do it correctly, it can create resentment in the locker room, especially from veterans. Now, Joe Judge has two things working in his favor here, right? Number one, this is a very short training camp. Let's just say this was a normal year, Anita, and he had a month, and he did this for a month, and he rode these guys like crazy for a month. By the end of that month, they might be like, forget this guy. This is ridiculous. Who does he think he is? He hasn't won a single NFL game. But it's only 2 weeks. So that's that right now is a very big deal. And there's no preseason. So I think it's easier to sell to the players right now because there's no preseason, because there's no joint scrimmages. You have to, in these 14 days, kind of simulate that in the practices. So live practices, I think, are a little bit more palatable even to the veterans this year than maybe in previous years.
Here's and Jordan Renan again joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. But here's some other things I'm hearing, right? I'm hearing, like, if a player makes a mental mistake, not a physical mistake, but a mental mistake, they have to run a lap. I'm sorry. I've played football since I was 7 years old. That stuff I did at Pop Warner, and, you know, I tried out for my JV team. I made it. I didn't play, though. But, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, we did when we were younger. Not now. Here's what my concern is. Jordan.
Joe Judge's explanation is there needs to be accountability for mistakes. Now, it's not that anybody's, you know, running a lap and they're speeding around the field. They're jogging really slow. It's more just like, okay, you know, you cannot make these kind of mental mistakes on this team. Now, whether that's the way to go about it or not, it's a different story, but that's his reasoning. He provides reasoning to the players. He doesn't just say, go run a lap. His thing is, I'm telling them what the reason is because I want them to understand why. You know, that's the big thing, and I'm a big why person, by the way. Like, I want to know why am I doing this, why I need to do this. He's big on that. So he's hoping that that's sort of the bridge between losing a guy and them understanding the purpose of why he's doing it, however sophomoric we may think it is.
All right, I understand all that, but here's where I think, you know, what's that phrase? Something in the road. Here's where I think how number one, he's 38 years old. Okay, I can understand a Bill Belichick or a Bill Parcells handling or having this type of coaching style because of the respect that they've gained. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're like, yeah, you hear you
with six rings on his finger.
You hear players say how miserable they are. I mean, look at Gronk. He's got a smile on his face. Tom Brady, they got a smile on their face. Why? They're being coached by Bruce Arians as opposed to Bill Belichick. People don't necessarily like the way they don't have fun when they're with the Patriots, but Bill has so much respect, and you know that if you're a part of the Patriots, well, at least when you were with Tom Brady, you were sacrificing that type of treatment and behavior from your head coach because it's what you needed to do to try to win a Super Bowl. That's not the situation here, Jordan. Like, I think the Giants are going to be lucky if they win six games this season.
Well, Anita, isn't that what it's going to come down to? It's going to come down to, can you win, right? Because when you start losing is when when this stuff will really get tested, all right? Because if you're, okay, we can stomach these tactics, this coaching, if it leads to wins. Now, in the Giants' case, I think it's a little bit more than that. They've been bad the last couple years. They've been the worst team in the NFL the last 3 years. If they show progress, even if it's significant progress, they win seven games, right? But you could tell the team's trending in the right direction. They're better. I think it can still be sold. Okay, maybe this guy's way of coaching and way of working is effective. It doesn't necessarily have to be 12 wins and a Super Bowl the year one. I think they're in a position where it can be incremental gains because the guys that have been here the last couple of years, it's been bad. They've been a bad, bad team. So as long as they show that progress, I think Joe Judge will be able to sell it. I also do, and I've gotten to know him pretty well over the last 8 months since he's been hired, and he's a no BS guy, okay? You know that right from the bat. Like, you speak to him, you sit down, he is intense and he's not going to beat around the bush. So you kind of know what he brings to the table. But he's also, he's personable and smart. So I think in a way, he's going to try and walk that fine line. We're ultimately going to see if it's going to work. And the real test is when they hit that first losing streak, when things start looking bad and going sour, can he keep everybody and not start losing guys at that time?
Jordan, thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. Really do appreciate your insight. Obviously, you know how valuable it is considering in this COVID-19 pandemic season, the access that you have better than most. And so please know how much we appreciate your time on this Sunday morning. Thank you.
Appreciate it. You got it. Anytime, Anita. Have a great show. Let go.
Anita Marks with you. Hour 3 here on 98.7 ESPN. Let's talk some fantasy football again. It is that time of the year. In fact, ESPN will start their fantasy football marathon tonight at 9:30. It'll go 24 hours into tomorrow, Monday around 9:30. I participated in a 10-team, 14-round PPR draft that took place with me and Mina Kimes, who was on the show yesterday, Adam Schefter, Diana Rossini, and one of the best in the business, and that is Mike Clay, who joins us now on 98.7 ESPN. Mike, hi, good morning.
Good morning, Anita. Yeah, that draft was a lot of fun. I'm really fired up. We have the marathon coming up. It starts tonight. We're already, I'm working on some content prep now, and this is going to be a lot of fun. Of course, starts this evening, runs until tomorrow evening, so I can't wait. I'm fired up. I always love marathon season.
I know. I could hear it in your voice. Before we start diving into our mock draft, why don't you let the listeners out there know, like, you know, some of the programming that is going to be offered in the next, the 24 hours starting at 9:30 at night.
Yeah. So we have the kickoff show is tonight, right? So we're going to really dive into it from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. So that'll be on ESPN2 and replays a little bit after that. So we're going to, obviously get into the rankings, go position by position, talk about the most important topics in the game. So we're going to kick it off with that. And then tomorrow throughout the day, you'll see, Matthew Berry and Field Yates on your television screens. And then, of course, we are going to wrap it up with that draft tomorrow night. So if you head over to ESPN.com, we have the full schedule on there for, everything that's going on over the next day or two. And we're gonna get y'all ready because it's that time of the year. You got to get your drafts in the draft. I can't believe it, Anita. It feels like it's not coming because we don't have the preseason, but the season is just a couple of weeks away. So I'm looking forward to it.
You know, it's really interesting, Mike. You know, this is the third or fourth year that we're doing a fantasy football marathon, and I feel like it's such a gift for me to participate in it. And go up to Bristol, and we're up for, actually more than 24 hours. We're typically up anywhere between 22 to 32 hours. But the wealth of information I get from all our analysts when we're on it helps me as we get, helps me as I prepare for my own fantasy football drafts. And it was really kind of different for us to have the draft Friday. Or Thursday? What day did we have it? Friday, Thursday? It was really Friday. It was really without having all that information and all that analysis that we're usually so blessed with. It just goes to show you just how valuable it is. So I highly recommend everybody out there who's playing fantasy football. Boy, you really want to tune in to the marathon. That's for sure. All right, let's dive into our draft. Now I had the sixth pick, Mike. If I recall, did you have the fifth or the seventh?
I was seventh, so we were right okay. Next to each other.
You did, yeah, because you stole some players from me, dude. Yeah, funny. You're funny. All right, so I had the sixth pick. A number of all the top running backs went, and so when it got to me, I went with Michael Thomas, wide receiver for the Saints. It's a PPR. I felt really good about that pick. Who did you have? Who was your first overall pick at seven, Mike?
You know what? I'll tell you what. While we were waiting to draft, I was thinking about texting you to see which way you were going to go, right? Because we probably both agreed that the big five were going to come off the board, right? There's five running backs there at the top. We fully expected them to go, and then I was wondering if you would go running back or go with good old Michael Thomas. So I was kind of curious about that direction. You took Thomas. That allowed me to go to the running back. Well, and I'll be honest, Anita, that makes me more comfortable this season because there is just so much depth at the wide receiver position, and I kind of want to load up on running backs in the first two rounds if possible. So what I did is I went with Derrick Henry, and look, I know that he doesn't do a ton as a pass catcher. I think he'll do more this season because they don't really have much in terms of a clear pass catching back behind him. Deion Lewis, of course, is gone. So that's good news. And Henry's rushing production is likely to come down a bit, after a really good 2019, but he's still going to be the guy in this backfield and is a strong candidate to lead the NFL in carries rushing yards and rushing touchdowns. So that's why I went with his seven.
Okay. So so very interesting. That's going to be your draft strategy, is you're going to go running back. Your favorable draft strategy, Mike, you're going to go running back first two rounds this season?
Yeah, and remember, you'll never want to go in and say 100% I'm doing something. You have to be flexible and let the draft come to you. And that's what I would have done had you taken Henry or someone else. I probably would have taken Michael Thomas, because after that big five's gone, I think he's kind of the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. That being said, there are 14 running backs I feel really good about this season. I want to go into week one with one or two of those 14 guys in my running back slots. If I don't get two of them, maybe I'm picking early in the draft and you know, one of those 14 doesn't get back to me, which is a very much a possibility this year because of the running back demand, then I'm probably just throwing that second slot away. I'm just going to fade it. I'm not going to reach on a running back I don't like in round three just to play catch up. I'm going to focus on those star wide receivers, maybe one of the star tight ends at that round 2-3 turn if Kittle or Kelce fall. That's the direction I'm going, because as well, I'm sure we'll get to here, there's just so much talent in the, we'll say, rounds 3 through 5 or 6 at wide receiver.
All right, so I want Michael Thomas 1. I came back around. Now, I was eyeing Josh Jacobs and Miles Sanders. I love these two guys this season, and they went. So I'm assuming you ended up with one of them, right?
I had, I went Kenyon Drake at 14. I know you wanted him.
Oh, you went Kenyon Drake. So I went Austin Eckler. Mm-hmm. And I was okay with it, but you know, and you guys, you'll see if you tune in Monday night, Trey Wingo and Matthew Berry, they do like a 5-7 minute analysis in regard to our teams at the end of the draft. And Matthew really loves it, and Trey, they both really like Eckler this season. Are you as high on Eckler as they are?
Yeah, I definitely like Eckler. You know, he's obviously a bit undersized. He's never a guy that's going to get a ton of goal line work, and he's not going to get 250-plus carries. But still, I mean, even with Melvin Gordon there most of last season, he played 35 snaps a game, right? He ran 20 pass routes a game. He handled almost 20% of the targets. And, yeah, he was only at a little over a third of the carries, but that was still enough to be a top five fantasy running back. Remember, there's more committees than ever. There's more passing to the running back than ever before. There are fewer guys, you know, kind of going up there and just handling all of the snaps and 300 carries. It just doesn't happen very often. So he's one of the best in the business, and we're talking PPR. So, you know, if the guy's going to push for 90 catches, which he probably will if he's healthy, then we're in good shape. And oh, by the way, Anita, Melvin Gordon is no more. He's gone. He's in Denver.
Right.
So it's Eckler and it's Justin Jackson and Josh Kelly. I mean, certainly Eckler has a very high floor in PPR league.
So now we get to round three. And again, a reminder, this is a 10-person league. I wanted Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. Now, I know you and I, you know, we've worked together for several years now. We talk about wait on a quarterback. I think this is an exception. I think this year is an outlier with these two guys. So I wanted either one of those guys. And I believe, what was it, you and Adam Schefter grabbed them before me. Is that correct? Did you end up with one of these quarterbacks?
No, it was Daniel. Daniel Dopp took one of them at 24th overall, which isn't, I mean, I have them ranked 34th and 35th on my board, those two quarterbacks. So I am low. I probably won't get them very often. I think there's just other values, as you kind of just alluded to. But I don't think it's terrible by any means. I don't think, you know, the 24th sort of area. Damian took Mahomes at 22. That's a little bit rich for me, but look, you get your guys, right? If you believe in them, you think they're going to deliver again at that high level, it's not gonna crush you by any means.
So Damian Woody and Daniel Dobb ended up with Mahomes and Lamar. So I'm sitting there, and I went with Chris Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got the wide receiver at one, I went running back. And then at 4, I got Amari Cooper. At 5, I got Todd Gurley. Now we're at 6, and I was eyeing Kyler Murray. Now that's the guy you took. Right?
Yeah, that's where I went, right. And round 6, maybe a tiny, tiny bit early, but, you know, I didn't think he would come back to me. And here's the thing. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago in year 2, we saw Patrick Mahomes explode into the league MVP and the fantasy superstar, a league winner. Last season, it was Lamar Jackson who did the same. This year, who's the most likely player to do that at the quarterback position? I don't think it's even close, right? It's clearly Kyler Murray. He only costs you a 6th or 7th round pick in most fantasy drafts, and he has that ceiling. Now, maybe he just stays where he was last year. Remember, he was QB8 as a rookie, which is really good. But he has a lot with his legs. He gets DeAndre Hopkins. It's Cliff Kingsbury's second season running an NFL offense. It's Murray's second season in the NFL. All signs point to him being even better this year. So you put that together, basically a borderline top five quarterback with QB1 upside. I'm going to take that shot at 54th overall. I'm okay with it once those top wide receivers are off the board.
So I went with DK Metcalf because Murray was gone. And then I came back around at 7 and I got Russell Wilson. Here's another one for you. At 8, I took Gronk. Earlier that day, I had heard Bruce Arians' comments in regard to Gronk looking like he did 5 years ago. Obviously, him and Tom Brady are really enjoying their time in Tampa and what they're doing with Bruce Arians. He's playing without that elbow brace. And the big thing, I'm looking at COVID-19. I'm looking at a pandemic. I'm looking at a Tom Brady that has not had a lot of time to gel, mesh, and create chemistry with a number of the players. And obviously, Gronk is the most familiar, the most comfortable player. I think Gronk is going to get a lot more targets than what most people anticipate. Your thoughts on me taking Gronk at 8?
I think that's fine at 75th overall. That's not too far off where I have him. I think the only concern we have really is that he might play 35 to 40% of the snaps, right? They have O.J. Howard to block. They have Cameron Brate there. They have a lot of depth. But this is a team that should run a lot of 12, right? They don't really have a secure number three wide receiver. It's going to be Godwin and Evans handling a huge chunk of the snaps and targets at wide receiver. And then you're going to see a lot of multiple tight end sets. At least that's where the tea leaves seem to be pointing. But we know it doesn't take a lot to be a top 10 or top 12 fantasy tight end. We know that. And if Gronkowski scores 6 or 7 touchdowns and is targeted quite often when he's on the field, that'll pay off for you. So I don't mind that upside look there. I mean, it's probably a little bit more secure than what I did. I waited till the 10th round and took Noah Fant, a tight end, who is one of my favorite breakout players of, in fantasy this season. In fact, if we get to bold takes on tonight's show, again, right around 10 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to talk a little bit about Noah Fant. All I'll say is that he is involved in that discussion. So, I went a little riskier there, but I think that Fant has tremendous upside.
I went Daryl Henderson at 9, Sterling Shepard at 10. I really wanted Brandon Cooks, by the way, but he went before it got to me, so I took Sterling Shepard. And then I want to talk about Damian Harris, because this is a guy, last time you were on the show, you're the one who queued me up on him. And then, of course, good friend of both of ours, Cynthia Freeland, was on with me as well. She's high on Damian Harris. So based on both you and Cynthia's analysis, I grabbed Damian Harris at 11. Your thoughts on that, and what's the latest in regard to that Patriots backfield?
Yeah, I have to stop coming on the show before we draft. You and I combined to take full money back. I think we talked about Henderson last time. You also took Paris Campbell late. I think we talked about him. He's one of my favorite sleepers. And, of course, as you mentioned, Damian Harris. So, yeah, here's the thing. I mean, there's some reports lately that maybe Sony Michel will be available in week 1 or week 2 early in the season. But, he's barely been on the field, right? He's still recovering from injury. And in the meantime, Damian Harris, who was third-round pick last season, has looked like he's going to be the lead back. So it's very possible they come out against Miami in week 1 and Harris gets 15 carries and 2 or 3 targets in this Patriots backfield. And we're talking about a guy you can get very late in your draft. And by the way, if you're wondering about pedigree a little bit here, Damian Harris played more snaps than Josh Jacobs their final season together at Alabama. You know, he was the lead back in that offense, and he kind of fell to round 3 for whatever reason. But there's a lot of a lot of belief here that this guy can be a 3-down back and one of the better backs in the league. So I'm really excited to see what he can do this season.
All right, Mike, some final thoughts, maybe some nuggets. I don't believe you and I are in any more fantasy leagues together. We're not going to be drafting against one another. Don't be shy in giving some of your secrets away right now. Any final thoughts for our listeners before I let you go?
I briefly mentioned it there. I think it's worth talking about that Rams backfield for just a second, because I took Cam Akers, and then just a few picks later, you took Daryl Henderson. And I'll tell you what, if you look at the Rams running backs during the Sean McVay era, which has been 3 seasons, and granted, I know Todd Gurley has been there, but keep in mind that he also had, he's beat up a little bit, had the bad season last year, of course, but Rams running backs as a whole are top 5 in carries inside the 5 and fantasy points and touchdowns each of the past 3 seasons, all 3 of them, not just total, all 3. So, You have Cam Akers, who they took in round two. You have Daryl Henderson, who was a round three pick last season, that are probably going to handle a bulk of the touches. And here's the thing. I got Akers in the eighth round. You took Henderson in the ninth round, and often he goes even later than that. So you can hedge. You can take both guys, and whichever one wins that battle can end up paying off in a big way. So I really like that strategy that, this season. It's a very, very friendly running back backfield there with Sean McVay leading the charge.
Why did you take, last question for you, why did you take Akers over Henderson? What is it about Akers? He's a rookie. This is a COVID-19 environment. Not a lot of time to get ready for the season. Not a lot of time to learn that pass protection to protect golf. I'm curious, why'd you go with Akers over Henderson?
Yeah, and by the way, I think I'm a Henderson apologist. I think it could go either way, but I'm reading the tea leaves here, right? Lindsay Theory does a great job covering the Rams. She said all along she thinks Akers is going to be get the first shot. And by the way, he's a little bigger than Henderson. You know, he's probably more likely to handle more carries and get that girly workload near the goal line because of the size and the strength. The guy ran a 4.47 and put up 20 on the bench. You know, he has good size and strength and speed. Terrific yards after contact and forced missed tackle profile, which usually leads to good things in the pros. So, look, I'm not dismissing the fact that Daryl Henderson, over his final 350 or so carries in college, averaged 8.9 yards per carry, which is just ridiculous. I'm not dismissing that. Again, I think he very well could win this battle. But again, you could take them both. They're neither one of them is going to crush you in your draft. So in terms of draft capital. So I would hedge if I can. I'm going to take Akers first. He's going earlier in drafts too. That's another key component to this. But again, if I can get both, I'm happy with that.
Fantastic. Great stuff as always, Mike. Really do appreciate your time and really excited about the Fantasy Football Marathon that kicks off later on tonight, 8 o'clock on ESPN. Start watching it. Mike is a big part of it. And tomorrow, I believe, our mock draft starts airing around, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, something like that?
Yeah, it's 7 p.m. Eastern, off the top of my head, is when that draft airs. So tune in to that.
7 p.m.
Yeah, I believe it's 2.5 hours it runs, but it's a lot of coverage, a lot of analysis. We go, you know, if you watch the marathon in the past, we kind of just did a handful of rounds, right? You know, but this time, no, we're not messing around. We're going 14 rounds deep. We're going to really get into it, talk sleepers, guys like Mecole Hardman and Noah Fant and Damian Harris. We're going to go deep in this draft, and I'm really pumped because that's going to help you, the players who play fantasy, not just, you know, make the easy picks early on, really get into it and win your draft in the mid to late stages.
Great stuff as always, Mike. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. You got it.
You too, Anita. Take care.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.